Now, to be fair, many of the demagogues were not venal. Many of them didn't pursue their own agendas, even if they're presented like that by the sources. In addition to the social snobbery directed against the demagogues, many ancient writers have personal axes to grind against them. Cleon gets an abysmal press in Thucydides and Aristophanes. According to Thucydides, Cleon prolonged the Peloponnesian War so that his own corrupt activities would never become public. He ripped off the people, he ripped off Athens, and even when he died in battle against Sparta, Thucydides cannot say anything good about him. In reality, Cleon does a good job, as we'll see in our discussion of the Peloponnesian War. And Cleon doing a good job is going to be a major heresy on my part, so stay tuned for that one. Thucydides hates Cleon because Cleon probably arranged for Thucydides to be exiled in 424 BC. A century later, the Athenian constitution also rips into Cleon for his lack of decorum on the rostrum as he addressed the people in the assembly, unlike everyone else who spoke properly and civilly. Remember my interpretation of the phrase Golden Age as it applied to Pisistratus? I said that the Athenian constitution called Pisistratus's tyranny that because Pisistratus muzzled the growing political power of the people. He introduced measures like traveling deem justices and loans to farmers to keep the people on their lands, not milling around in the city. The Athenian constitution was written when it's those same people are able to exploit rhetoric to gain political ascendancy over the people. We need to bear in mind that the bad press the demagogues get is hardly fair and that it's because of the snobbery that existed. Some demagogues were corrupt, but others weren't. And we shouldn't forget that those who claw their way to the top, like the Cleons of the world, often do a better job than those who can exploit family connections. Think about us today. We can see then the dangers in classical Athens from the rhetoric of clever speakers, especially as the people who are debating on policy and then voting on it are largely non-experts. In fact, most of them can't even hear what's going on. Today, we might be better at evaluating the policies of political leaders. We might be better at evaluating them more critically, that is. Not least because we're better informed, because we have ease of access to all sorts of information, especially online. The sorts of things that the classical Athenians clearly didn't have. But that doesn't stop us being misled or presented with information that we're told is legitimate and was vetted by intelligence agencies in various countries. Think about the use of scare tactic rhetoric that was peddled to the public over the threat of WMD being manufactured in Iraq. Nothing much changes then. Perhaps we shouldn't chuck every politician in the venal or hidden agenda box, or dismiss every single thing we hear as a lie, or at the least an embellishment. But are our expectations different from those of the Athenians? If we can recognize that leaders falsify the truth, and I'll return to this point in our next lecture, were the Athenians any different? Were they in the dark about rhetorical tricks as we might not be? The impression we get is that people in the assembly were putty in the hands of clever speakers. They exploited all sorts of rhetorical tricks to make their cases. And so we see the fundamental flaw in the direct democracy. It's hardly surprising then that the people made disastrous choices when they were swayed more by emotion than reason. Swayed more by the act of someone speaking than the content. But it's clear that the people back then were aware of the exploitation of rhetoric for political purposes. I mean, everyone knew what rhetoric was about because it was taught in schools. But they were also warned about it and its pitfalls by the very people making speeches. For example, in 427, the Athenians were debating what to do with the people of Mytilene on the island of Lesbos after they'd revolted from the Athenian Empire. We'll come on to this in a later lecture. Thucydides gives us a version of the debate in the assembly about this punishment, during which Cleon spoke, and he criticized the people for how they were speech goers, as he calls them, and how they enjoyed a good speech for its performance rather than its content. And in a play like Euripides' Hippolytus that was performed in 428, Hippolytus says that speakers who look like fools before wise men are seen as eloquent by the crowd. The Athenian system of democracy strikes us as odd when the people seem to expect to be beguiled by the rhetoric of their speakers. But what are the implications of the relationship of the speaker to the mass of the people in the radical democracy? Does it affect the sovereignty of the people in reality? And if our own democracy owes so much to that of the Greeks, how different is it? Finally, how is rhetoric used by modern politicians and leaders? In other words, what is the rhetorical debt that today's leaders or speechwriters owe to the Greeks? These questions we're going to address in our next lecture. Thank you very much.